Tonight is Megillat Rut, the book of Rut, with Rabbi Dr. Irving Jacobs. Lovely to see you all, and here goes.
Hi, thank you once again, Michael. I'll bring this as near to me as I can to make sure I'm heard. I think that everybody knows the story of Ruth, but not everybody has read the book of Ruth, and certainly not in its original Hebrew, with the net result that they're missing out on a gem of literature, not just Jewish literature, a gem of general literature, because the book of Ruth bears testimony to the fact that the ancient writers of Israel developed remarkable sophistication in the narrative art. After all, the book is, 2,800 years ago? Some date it even earlier, back to the period of David himself. And so, 3,000 years ago, and yet our writer, anonymous writer, is able, within four chapters, or perhaps I should say 85 verses, he wouldn't have known about chapters, within 85 verses, with deft strokes of his pen, he creates convincing figures, acting out a convincing situation, and at the end of it all, he packs a message. If you're aware of the message, but by the time we finish this evening, I'll make you aware of it. And in fact, it's a drama. Because of the 85 verses, more than 50 are dialogue. Make you aware of that. More than 50 verses are dialogue, which means I could transform it into a play. And I think the whole point of the author was that the reader should act it out, act the drama out in his imagination. See the figures. Hear their conversation. And so that's what we'll do. We'll try and act out our drama this evening. And it begins with a vague statement. And it was in the days when the judges judged. You can't get more vague than that, because the period of the judges is probably 300 years, depending on when you date the Exodus, and I prefer the 15th century as the date of the Exodus. So the judges are from 1400 to 1100 BCE. That's 300 years. So when? Well, once again, by the time we finish, I hope to pin the tail on the donkey. We will narrow it down. But these opening words do provide me with an important background. I don't know if you're aware of the period of the judges, but it would be fair to say that in the ugly ancient history of our people, in fact, in the incredibly ugly ancient history of our people, the period of the judges is the worst. The nation of Israel went down into the pit. The pit of depravity, the pit of idolatry, of lawlessness, mayhem, barbarism. And we're being told that it's against that background the drama of Ruth is being enacted. Okay, so let's carry on. I'm moving fairly quickly, but feel free to stop me. Well, you know, Am Ba'aretz, there was a famine in the land, which means God wasn't very pleased with them. A man goes from Bethlehem in Judah. And by the way, Bethlehem means battleground, nothing to do with bread. Lagur b'shtei Moab, to dwell temporarily in the territory of Moab. Hu v'ishto, he and his wife, shnei banav and his two sons. V'shem ha'ish Elimelech, the man's name is Elimelech. V'shem ishto Naomi, the wife's name is Naomi. V'shem b'nei banav, his two sons are called Machlon v'Chilion. They're all, with the exception, of course, of Naomi, they're all flat characters. I don't know if you're familiar with this language, but in literature you have a round character, somebody who's centre stage, going to play a role. You've got flat characters who are part of the props. Well, the husband and the two sons are props. And they're going to be dispensed with very quickly. They're Ephratim. Now, what does Ephratim mean? That's an interesting word. Usually mistranslated as Ephraimites. Well, they weren't Ephraimites, they were Judahites. Ephrat or Ephrata was the original name of Bethlehem. And so they are Ephratim. They may be of old families that go back to the days of Ephrat. Mi Bethlehem Yehuda, from Bethlehem in Judah, by Yavol Sedei Moab, they come to the territory of Moab, by Yehudah, they remain there. By Yamot Elimelech Ish Naomi, Elimelech, Naomi's husband, dies, but Ishahi Ushnei Vaneha, and she and her two sons are left. So one prop is gone. They marry for themselves Moabite wives. the Torah would not be too happy with that, because the Torah prohibits marriage with a Moabite. The rabbis jump in and say, no, that's only Moabite men should marry Moabite women, but Israelite men could marry Moabite women. But that raises another question: who converted them? That's another favourite. There are not too many Bot Edim in ancient Moab. Right, so were they converted? Did they undergo some kind of formal adoption of the faith of their husbands? We shall see. But it continues. V'shem ha'achat Orpah, the one was called Orpah, something with Oref and Nek. V'shem ha'sheni Rut, the second one was called Rut, and we don't know what that is to do with. Suggested it's from Ritut, meaning friendship. But the ayin's not there, so we'll leave that alone. V'yeshu shamshi Esther Shanim, and they remained there, they dwell there for 10 years. V'yamutu gam shnehem Machlun b'kilyon, and both Machlun and Kilyon die. And this poor woman is now left bereft of her husband and her two sons. And that is a very vulnerable position to be in. In ancient times, women had to be protected by a man, a father, a husband, a brother, a son. She has nothing. And she is, after all, an alien in an alien land. And so it won't surprise you that she and her daughters-in-law rose. She returned from the field of Moab, the territory of Moab. Ki shama'a bistei Moab, because she had heard in the territory of Moab, ki farkada lunai etamo, that the Lord had visited his people, latet lahem lechem, to give them food. Vateitse min hamakom asher hayita shama. And so she left the place where she had been, and her two daughters-in-law with her. Now, that is, of course, the first major step. These two girls are Moabitesses, and they're proposing to turn to it, a land where the Moabite is not a favoured person. So by returning with her, they are indicating that they are dedicated to her. These are two remarkable young women. And they commenced their journey to return to Judah. And Naomi says to her two daughters-in-law, Lechna, go, Shovna, return, Isha Levetima, to the house of her mother. Yas Adunai Machem Chesek Asher Sitem Yemameitim Vimadi. And may the Lord perform a similar act of unselfish love for you. Chesed is selfless love. It's an act for which there is no reward. So may the Lord perform a similar act of unselfish love for you as you have done for me and for the dead, because you have no need now to remain with me. By remaining with me, knowing that there's absolutely nothing in it for you, that is Chesed. So go home. Return home. Yeah.
Normally people refer to as the house of their father. Why in this case do they say house of
the mother? That's quite true. But we're not dealing with Israelites here. We're talking about Moabites.
Is that why?
I should imagine so. Go home to mummy. And why go home to mummy? For very good reason. We shall see. And it continues. Yitein Adonai lachem, may the Lord so grant it, Tzena menucha, that you will find rest, Isha beit Isha, each one of you in the house of a husband. Vatishak lahem, and she kissed them, Vatisena kolan, they lifted up their voices, Vatiftena, and they wept. They're in a vortex of grief. They've lost everything. They don't want to leave their mother-in-law, but she's told them the truth. It makes good sense. Go home, find a husband. But notice something about Naomi. In whose name does she speak? She speaks in the name of the God of Israel. That was a godless society. This woman is a God-fearing woman. And it'll come up again and again and again. But Omarala, they answer her, Ki itchan ashuv, with you will we return. And the Hebrew places the emphasis. Not we will return with you we will return. We're determined. They are mecha to your people. But Tomi Naomi and Naomi said, Shov Nabanotai, go, my daughters. Lama telachni mi, why would you go with me? Why would you go with me? Ha'od li vanim, will I have further sons, b'mei, in my womb? V'hayu lechem le'anashim, that there should be your husband. Leveret marriage, childless widow, marries the brother of her late husband. They don't have any brothers there, so you're going to wait around and the off chance I'll become pregnant and have a son? Shov nabonotai, return my daughters. Lechna, go, kiza kanti meyot la'ish. I'm too old to be with a man. Ki amarti that I should suggest. Yeshli tikva, there's some hope. Gam hayiti alayla la'ish. Tonight I'll go with a man. Vagam yalati vanim, and I'll have children. I'll have sons. And even if I did, halahein tasaberna adashi dalu, you're going to hang around till they grow up. You'll be middle aged by then. Halahein teagena, will you remain in a state of unmarried? Aguna, here's your word, aguna. Levilti heot la'ish, without being with a man. Albanotai, know my daughters. And then she says it, ki marli me'od mikem. Literally, for bitter to me from you. Now I'm going to translate that very simply. On account of you, it is all the more bitter for me. On account of you, it is all the more bitter for me. So I have to find a place. The text is a little bit small. Ki yata bi yad Adonai, because the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. She sees her fate as a divine visitation. Possibly because she's done something wrong, or simply because he is God and he does what he wants. In any event, I am engulfed with tragedy, and it's all the more bitter for me to see you engulfed in my tragedy. You have an alternative. So by sticking with me, you're not making it better for me, you're making it worse for my conscience. Go find a better life. I'll be a little happier with that situation. Vatisena kolam vativkena od. And they lifted up their voices and wept again in their vortex of grief. Vatishak orpa lachamutan, orpa kisses her mother-in-law. Verut says no. Davka stays with her. She won't go. Vatome, and Naomi says to Ruth, Hine shava yivimte, your sister-in-law has returned the lama to her people. Ve'el Eloheha unto her gods. Note, she's gone back to her people and to her gods. So who was she worshipping up to that point? Clearly, when she married an Israelite, she adopted the god of her husband. Both of them. Whatever formal ceremony they may have not gone, I don't know. But on marrying an Israelite husband, they formally adopted the god of their husbands. And now go back to your own god. Shuvi achare yivimteich. Follow your sister-in-law's example. But Tomei Ruth, and Ruth said, Al tifkei bi le'ozveich. Do not force me to leave you, la shuvi achareich, to depart from you. And here comes, of course, the first of the famous lines from the Book of Ruth. Very beautiful. Certain lines go through the Book of Ruth like a gold thread through a tapestry. And these, of course, are international. Because where you go, I go. Vashir talini, where you will spend the night, alin, I will spend the night. Amech ami, your people are now my people. I'm no longer a Moabitess. Velohai chelohai, your God is my God. I will worship no other God now. Vashir tamuti amut, where you die, I die. V'shamech aveh, there shall I be buried. And then she swears in the name of the God of Israel, who is now her God. Ki ko ya'aseh Adonai li v'cho Yosef. May God do such and such to me, and even more if I leave you. She's binding herself by a terrible oath. Ki amavet yafrik b'ni uveinech. Because only death will separate us two. And having made that oath, Naomi can no longer press her. So she sees she's determined to go with her. Va'techdal ledaber eleha. So she ceases to speak to her anymore. Va'teilach nashteim ad bu'ana beit lechem. And they journeyed until they came to beit lechem. Va'ikvu'ana beit lechem. When they arrived there, va'tehom kolai aleihem. The whole city was in consternation over them. Cities had 2,000 or 3,000 population. Everybody knew everybody. Everybody remembered Naomi and her husband and her two sons going out. A happy family. And look what's come back. Vatamarna, and they said, Hazot Naomi? This is Naomi? Vatome Alehen, and she said to them, Al Kikren Ali Naomi, don't call me Naomi. Kren, which means my pleasantness. Kren Ali Mara, call me bitterness. Ki Heimar Shaddai Li Me'od, because Shaddai has dealt most bitterly with me. And again, a use of a very strange word here. Up to now, it's used Hashem. Suddenly, Shaddai. And Shaddai, of course, is the patriarchal name of God. That's what Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob refer to him. What does Shaddai mean? I purposely didn't translate it. You can have a look how he translates it there. I don't mind. How does he translate it there? The Almighty. That is how it is normally translated, and probably wrong. Well, that's naughty of me to say that. But I'll justify it. If I say Shaddai means Almighty, it's because I'm taking it from the root Shaddad. And Shaddad means to be powerful. But it's a pejorative word, a negative word. Shodded in Hebrew is terminator. Despoiler. And it gives us another word, Shade, a demon. Therefore, to say Shaddai comes from this verb, I think is extremely unlikely. Suggested that it may be associated with a word from the oldest Semitic language. The oldest known Semitic language is Akkadian. It was spoken in Mesopotamia. And Shadu in Akkadian means a mountain. And we refer to God as a mountain. Hatsur Tamim Paolo. So Shadu may mean the mighty mountain God. But I prefer another interpretation. Within the Semitic languages there is a root Shadad, which means to enclose. And hence, to protect. Shaddai is the protector God. And that's how Abraham calls him. Because God says to him, Hine Anochi Magen Loch, I'm your shield. And so she says, with great irony, Shaddai, my protector, has now dealt bitterly with me. And that adds to the intensity of it. Was that clear? Every now and again, I'm going to take you a little bit into the field of language, otherwise you won't understand the text. Batashov Naomi v'ruta Moavia kalataima. The two of them return. Hashava mistei Moav. Ruth would come back from the territory of Moab. V'heim abau Beit Lechem, and they came to Beit Lechem. And his last three words are going to set the scene for the rest of the story. Bitchilat Ketzir Seorim, at the beginning of the barley harvest. This is crucial because the harvest is going to introduce my third remaining round character, my major character, and you know how the story will continue. Sure enough, who's next? Ula Naomi Moda Li'isha. Now Naomi had a relative of her husband, Ish Gibor Chayu. How do you translate Ish Gibor Chayu? A man of substance, says the text here. A man of substance. Nice, isn't it? Why would he call it a man of substance? I mean, I don't like Art Scroll translation, I have to be honest with you. I feel it fosters naivety. But I can understand his translation. Chayu means wealth. So an Ishki Bochayel means he's got a big bank balance. Perhaps not today, but in those days. I think that is a totally erroneous translation. And I'm going to suggest that we use the more original translation, a mighty man of valor. Why? We'll see. But that's the one I'm going to stick to. He was a mighty man of valor. Mimishpachat Elimelech, of the family of Elimelech, with Shmo Boaz, his name was Boaz. Vatomer Ruta Moavial Naomi. And Ruth says, the Moabite. She's reminding us she's a Moabite. Why are we reminding us she's a Moabite? Because she's now in an alien situation. And she wants to take advantage of an Israelite practice. And she says, El Naomi to Naomi, Eilecha naha sadeh, let me go out into the field of Alakada Bashibolim, that I may glean among the ears of corn, Acharashe emsachem bi'enav, behind him in whose eyes I hope to find favor. But Tomen, she says to her, Lechibiti, go, my daughter. The Israelite practice was that you had to leave for the poor. Leket for shikha. Anything you dropped as you were gathering in the corn, you had to leave it. Anything you forgot, you had to leave it. The corners of your field, you had to leave it. For that was to sustain the poor. The poor Israelite, she is a Moabitess. But she has adopted the God of Israel. And she says, your people are my people. And so this young lady, no doubt with a certain amount of trepidation in her heart, would go out to glean in the field. Behind the man, she wants to find favour in his eyes. She is not seeking opportunity. She's not a flirt. They need the protection of a man. This man is a relative. Let's see if we can get him to protect us. Why they need this protection will also become clear. And she goes and she gleans in the field, behind the reapers. And it was just her luck that she was in that part of the field that belonged to Boaz of the family of Elimelech. It wasn't an accident. This is divine providence. Yeah. The hand of God is moving this. And Boaz came from Beit Lechem, and he says to the reapers, Adonai Machem, the Lord be with you. And they answered him, Yivarecha Adonai. May the Lord bless you. I mean, why are you telling me this? Because this is telling me something very important. This was a godless society, and yet Boaz and his associates speak in the name of the God of Israel. And look at the relationship between them. The one blesses the other. This suggests a warmth, a certain caring relationship. This is not boss man and workman. These are Israelites, the servants of the one true God. Vayomi Boaz, and now Ron Boaz says to the young man, Anitzav al HaKotzrim, in charge of the reapers, Lemi Hanara Azot, whose girl is that? It's a poignant question. Here's a strange girl. You know everybody. But if I see a girl on her own, my first question is not, who's that girl? Who's looking after her? Lemi, to whom does she belong? And the young man answers, Nara Moaviyahi, she is the Moabite girl. She don't belong to anybody. Hashavim Naomi Mistei Moab, who returned with Naomi from the field of Moab. Vatome, and she said, please, Alakatana, allow me now to glean. Ve'asafti ba'omarim, that I may gather from among the sheaves, Akre Akotzrim, after the reapers. And indeed, Vatavo, Vatamur, Me'azaboke, Ve'adata, and she's been standing there from first thing this morning until now. Ve'shifta bayit me'at, when she's taking a short rest in the lodge, in the house that we provided. This girl is working out in the baking sun from first thing in the morning. Does Boaz know her? Didn't recognize her, but he knows her. Just look how the story carries on. Vayome Boaz el Rut, and Boaz says to Ruth, Halo shamaat biti, and I can translate this in one of two ways. Do you not hear? Will you not listen to me? Or halo shamat biti means, have you not heard? Have you not heard? What has she not heard? We'll find out. But whatever it is, look what he says to her. Al teilechi lilkot besadeh acher. Do not go and glean in any other field. It's giving an order, you've never met her before. Do not depart from here. And that's an archaic form. It should have been Ta'avri. You must remain here, again an archaic form, Pshitpaki, in Narutai, with my young men, my young women rather. He's anxious, isn't he? Why, does he fancy her? Don't think so. He's anxious. You stay here. And why does he use the archaic forms? Well, maybe the author wants to give a certain rustic flavouring to his book, or alternatively, he has received the original dialogue, orally, that came down to him from the days of the judges, an archaic dialogue, and he's incorporated it into the text of his book. But he's not finished, by the way, he's not finished at all. Einaich basadeh, let your eyes be on the field asher yitzorun, where they are harvesting, v'halacht acharei, and you will follow them. I've told the young men not to lay a finger on you. Now that's interesting. Had he not told them, they'd have been fingering. See the point? And why not? Who's protecting her? She has no man. For Tamit, when you're thirsty, you can go to the vessels, and you can drink from the water the young men have drawn. And on hearing this, Ruth falls upon her face and prostrates herself to the ground. She's not schmoozing up. This is genuine gratitude. She is overwhelmed by this man. And she says, she says to him, Madua matzatichen beinecha, why have I found favour in your eyes, lahakireini, that you show me such recognition, va'anochi nochria, when I am only a stranger, I'm an alien here, I'm a Moabitess. And Boaz reveals his hand, vayam Boaz vayom Allah. And Boaz says to her, listen girl, hugatali, it has been told to me in detail. Kol asher asitim chamotech, all that you have done for your mother-in-law, acharei moti sheikh, after the death of your husband, v'tazvi avich v'imech, you forsook your mother and your father, v'eretz molatech, the land of your family, v'telchi el ama shelo yadat mot yushom, and you come to a people, to a land you didn't know heretofore. That was an undertaking. That was courage. That's what I call dedication. And he blesses her in the name of God. And then comes the next golden thread. Yeshalim Adonai Paolech. May God pay you for your deed. And may your reward be complete from the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. They acknowledge her to be what? A convert to the God of Israel. He's telling her, you said you're an alien, and I'm telling you, you're not an alien. You have come under the wings of the God of Israel, you deserve his protection for the way that you have behaved. Very sensitive approach. Batoma, and she says, Emtachem be'inecha Aduni, I must have found favour in your eyes, O Lord. Ki nicham tani, because you have comforted me, v'chi dibarta alev shivchatecha, you have spoken to the heart of your handservant. When I'm not one of your handmaidens. What does it mean you've spoken to the heart? When I came in here this morning, I had my heart in my mouth. I was afraid. Will they reject me? Will they cast me away? And you have now spoken to my heart. You have allayed my fears. I can now stay. This is part of the drama. This is dialogue. Vayomila Boaz, Boaz says to her, Le'et ha'ochel, at lunchtime, Goshi, draw near, halom, to this place, v'achalti min alechem, you can eat from the food supplied, v'tavalt pitech b'chometz, dip your food into the vinegar, the soured wine, because they ate food by dipping, as you know from the Seder, v'teshev mitzad, I'm sorry, yes, but Teshev Mitzad HaKotzrim, And so she sat by the reapers. Vayitzbot la Khalid. And since the word Yitzbot doesn't occur anywhere in the whole of the Bible, we have to translate it on context. And he measured out for her, he, Boaz, personally, a measure of popcorn. Now, I'll translate it somewhat freely. Kali was ears of corn that were roasted on a griddle and were something of a delicacy. And so he says, you too, sweetie, they're for you as well. V'tochal v'tisba v'totav. And she ate to her fill, and she left over. What are you telling me she left over for? Oh, because it says, v'achal v'tata v'tata, you've got to eat and leave over. No, you'll see why she left over. Again, a subtle touch. V'atakum l'lakeit, and she gets up to glean. V'yitzav Boaz et ni'arav le'imo, and Boaz instructs his young man, saying, gam bein ha'omarim t'lakeit, allow her to glean between the sheep, not just behind you, that are coming in among you. Lo taklimuha, don't put her to shame. And make sure you pull out for her minatzvatim from the bundles. Vazatem, leave it. Velikta, let her glean it. Velotigo rubah, and you don't tell her off. And what's he up to? Does he fancy her? Put in plain language. You know, is this leading up to something else? Or are we looking at a man of great midot, a man of great refinement, personal refinement, who has seen in this girl an exceptional character and therefore feels, I have a responsibility to provide her needs and the needs of her mother-in-law. But I'm doing it subtly. I don't say to her, go here, go there, take. She doesn't know what's happening. He's telling the young men, you provide for her. So it's being done altruistically. And she gleaned in the field until evening. She beat out what she had gleaned. It was something like 3 gallons, liquid measure, of barley. That would be enough food to keep them going for a whole week. And she gathered that in one day. She must have wondered, how did that happen? But it happened. She carried it back home. And her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned, that it was such a huge amount. And Ruth takes out the popcorn that she had left over to give it to her mother-in-law. This was a delicacy. Her mother-in-law would not enjoy such luxury, and so Ruth won't eat it all for herself. She's got to bring some home for Naomi too. Isn't that a delightful touch? Insight into the character of the young woman. Batomila chamota. And so her mother-in-law says, hey, fall the cup down, where have you been? Where did you glean? Run our seat. Where were you working? Look what you only brought home. Whoever recognized you may be blessed. Naomi suspects, if you brought that much home, somebody has shown you recognition. And so she tells her mother-in-law what she had done with him. And the name of the man with whom I was working Hayom this day was Boaz. Vatome Naomi lechaluta, and Naomi says to her daughter-in-law, Baruch Hu Adonai, blessed be he to the Lord, asher lo azav chasdo et hachayim v'et hameitim, who has not forsaken his unselfish love with both the living and the dead. Vatome la Naomi, because Naomi said to her, Karuv lanu haish, this man is a relative, migoaleinu hu. He is one of our Goalim. And what does that mean? Goel means a redeemer. It was the practice in ancient Israel that there were members of the family who exercised a certain responsibility towards you. Not all relatives, certain relatives. For example, if you were taken captive, they had a responsibility to redeem you. If you were sold into slavery to a non-Israelite, they had a responsibility to redeem you. If you were killed, they had a responsibility to avenge your death. And if you had property, which you could no longer afford, it was his responsibility to purchase it so it should remain within the family unit. And she says, Boaz is our goel, or at least one of them. So blessed be the Lord that you have come into the care, that you have attracted the attention of this man. And Ruth said, guess what else he said to me? Gam ki amai lai. He said to me, Im haniarima sheli tidbakin, stick to my women, adim kilu et kol hakatzir asheli, until they have completed my harvest. Vatome Naomi Ruth kalata, and Naomi says to her daughter-in-law Ruth, Tov biti, that's very good, ki teitzi im ne'orotav, that you should go out with his young women. Velo yifgu bach besadeh acher, don't let them find you in any other field. Why? If she was to say, don't let him find you, they'll say, well, you might upset Boaz. No, don't let them find you. She's nervous. You sense that. Stick with his young men. Don't be out there on your own. It's making me nervous. Boaz, and so she's stuck with the men, young women of Boaz, lakate to glean at kolokitziah shorim to the end of the barley harvest, ukitziah chitim, and the wheat harvest. But in the meantime, vateshiv chamotah, she lived with her mother-in-law. She went out to work, but every night she came home to make sure Naomi's okay. Another subtle little touch. Have you got the picture so far? Can you sense the reality of our characters, our personalities? I'm reading it quite quickly. I won't read the whole book within the time allotted. But I think it's enough for you to see how the story is developing. Now, of course, comes the next phase of the story. And Naomi is going to become the facilitator. She is one of the three main characters. And she's going to be the shidduch macher. She's got a role to play. Naomi's, her mother-in-law says to Ruth, Biti, my daughter. Notice again, this is not mother-in-law, daughter-in-law, my daughter. Biti. Halo avakesh lach manoach asheitavla. Put it into colloquial English. You know I seek the best for you. So now, halo boaz medam modatanu. Ashayit et nyarotav. Now Boaz, our relative, stresses that, with whose young women you've been working, hinei huzore et gorin haseorim alayla. Tonight he is winnowing the barley. What's he talking about? In them ancient days, how did you separate the ears of corn or wheat from the straw? It's called winnowing. How did you do it? Pardon? No, you didn't bash it. No. You threw it up in the air so that the wind will carry away the chaff and the heavier wheat falls to the ground. It's a simple device, a bit primitive, but I think we all are occasionally. And it worked. But of course, what do I need for this to be effective? I need a wind. When does the wind usually blow? Evening. So he's going to do it in the evening. Not only that, when he has got his wheat, he can't leave it there because little animals, two-legged and four, will come and nick it. So what must he do? He's got to sleep there. He's got to guard it. And so, says Naomi, V'rachatz, I want you to wash. V'sacht, anoint yourself. Whether that means make yourself glisten or put on your perfume. For some simlotayich, put on your decent clothes, alayich. V'yaratzet ha-gorin, go down to the threshing floor. Al tivadila ish, don't make yourself known to the man. At kaloto le'achol v'lishtot until he's finished eating and drinking. V'hi b'shochbo, and when he lies down, v'yadat et ha-makom ha-she yishkav sham, note where he is lying down. Uvat, and you shall come, v'gilit margalotav, and uncover his feet, v'shachavt, and you should lie down, v'hu yagid lachet asher tasin, and he'll tell you what to do next. Now this does look very suspicious. You know, if we would interpret it in terms of the modern world, I wouldn't have to interpret it. She's making a play for him. She's offering herself to him. Well, it looks like, doesn't it? Get yourself dolled up, look nice, put a nice whiff of perfume on you, and when he doesn't quite know where he is, uncover his feet. Not at all. Not at all. This is not sexual. It's symbolic. This man is a goel. He has the power and authority to take her, to marry her. But she wants to indicate to him that she is prepared for this. I want you to exercise your right. And she's doing it in the only way possible. She's putting herself entirely in his hands. I trust you to be an honourable man. Get the point? And read on. He is an honourable man. Yeah, please challenge me.
Is it some kind of yibum? Yeah.
Pardon?
Some kind of yibum.
No, it isn't a yibum at all. A yibum can only be between a brother of a late husband and his widow. This is not yibum. This is something which evidently developed in ancient Israel beyond the prescriptions of the Torah, that where I have this hapless, unprotected woman, then I return to a goel, a redeemer, and say, come on, you've got a responsibility here, man, look after her. And that's what's going to happen.
But is it only because he's a relative?
Yes, this becomes the prerogative of the relative. He has a right.
There is another relative.
Wait, we're going to meet him. Yeah.
I thought, yeah.
There's no chalitza there. We're coming to that. It's not a chalitza. This is one of the big mistakes about the Book of Ruth. People think it's a chalitza, it's not. But we'll come to it in due course.
Do you think that when Boaz is so generous to her in the field, said, you can gather this, gather this,
yeah,
etc., do you think he's doing so because he's a generous, kind-hearted man, almost like, you know, Rachel and Cameron? Or is it that he already realizes that he has a duty anyway to her, so he's just exercising that duty?
I would say it's probably a bit of both. First of all, the man is overwhelmed by her conduct. That she is a woman of great virtue. But he's been called a Gibor Chayil as well. He is a man of virtue. And so, yes, he does feel a responsibility. But I think all the more so because he's confronted by something very special. Look how this Moabites is behaving.
Is it coincidence that they use the same or similar wording to talk about Abraham when he left his homeland and took up another god?
Well, yes, I mean, there's something about Ruth. I don't want to reveal all my hand at this stage. But yeah, but you're right to suspect there's something going on here about Ruth. I don't know if Boaz has Nevuah, but what Boaz does do is he puts himself in the hands of the God of his fathers. He may realize this is meant. We'll see. Let's see what he has to say. Let the man talk for himself. Vatomi Elehan, she says to her mummy-in-law, Kol asher tomri elai e'eseh, I'll do what you told me to do. Vatele de gore. Went down to the threshing floor. And she did everything mummy law and commanded her to do. Boaz ate and he drank. And he was of good spirit. He came to lie down at the end of the heap where he can keep an eye on things. Anybody comes in, I'll hear them. And so she comes in secretly. Va tegal margalotav, and she uncovered his feet, vatishkav, and she lay down, and does nothing more. She was lying there, not tickling him, just lying there. And at midnight, the man shivered, and he turned over. He's got a woman lying there at his feet. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you get this phrase, of course, in Purim, and you get it with the Exodus. Oh, it's not an uncommon phrase. And he says, Miat, who's that? I am Ruth, she answers, your handmaiden. Spread your garment, or rather the corner of your garment, over your handmaiden. Ki goelata, for you are a redeemer. What's she asking him to do? A formal act. She's not asking for sex. Spread your garment over your handmaiden, because that is a formal act of protection. I am now under I've come under the kanafav, the wings of the Holy One, blessed be He, but now I wish to come under your wings. That's the only gesture she makes to say, please take me. Vayomer, and he says to her, Berucha at ladunai, biti, blessed are you to the Lord, my daughter. Oh, he's so happy she's got himself a young lady. No. Heitaft chasdeich ha'acharon min harishon. You have done better with your latter act of unselfish love than you did with your former. What does that mean? We'll see. Levilti lechet acharei habachurim im dalvi mashir, by not chasing after one of the young men, whether he be poor or rich. What was her former act of unselfish love? That she gave up her home, gave up her people, and stuck with a woman who could do nothing for her. That's unselfish love. But he says, now you have overreached even that. Because now you're here, and you're a comely young woman. You could have married a young man of your choice. But you have acknowledged an obligation to the dead. Because what is the obligation to the dead? That a member of your family should take you and raise up a child who will inherit the name and legacy of the departed. So by coming to me, an old man, because he is an old man, he implies it. You could have gone to a young man, but I'm an old man. By coming to me, an old man, you've shown a dedication and a sense of duty to the departed, and that's an even greater act of love. Yeah?
Isn't the problem, though, that he's a rich old man?
Yeah, he's a rich old man. Yes, he is a rich old man. He's not any old man. He's a rich old man. And one can, you know, say this, all right, she is looking for the best possible catch. That's, you know, if you want to view it to that degree cynically. But there's something more here that we have to allow for. She has come to this man for some other reason. It hasn't been revealed yet. But maybe this young woman feels a sense of destiny. Let's wait and see. As I say, at this stage we can have all kinds of cynicism, but I think our cynicism has to be curtailed. This is not a sexual situation. This is a situation of acknowledging duty and responsibility. And then he says something strange to her. Va'ata now biti al tir'i. Do not be afraid. And why should you be afraid? Kol asher tomri eselach. Whatever you ask me, I shall do for you. Ki yodeh kol shar ami, ki eshet chayil at. All the people of my city know that you are a woman of valor. You are a woman of merit. Well, what does he say? How do you fit this into the story? Don't be afraid. Everyone knows you're a woman of valor. What's that going to do with the price of cheese? I'll tell you. She is a Moabitess. And yet she's asking a prominent member of Bethlehem, Judah, to take her as his wife. What will the rest of the people say? That you've taken this Moabitess who's come under the wings of the God of Israel, surely that is beneath your dignity, your status. And he says, don't worry about that, my girl, because everybody knows you are an Eshet Chayil, and therefore you're worthy to be the wife of a Gibor Chayil. That's how he's described, and he's using the same language to describe her. You're good enough for me, and everyone knows it. So don't be afraid. That subtle touch in the man. But he says, Ma, v'yata, ki omnam, ki goel anuchi. But now, although I might be a redeemer, v'gam yeshgol karo mimeni. There's somebody ahead of me in the queue. Somebody nearer. Lini halayla, stay here the night. V'haya v'boker, and in the morning, im yigaleich, if he wants to redeem him, tov yigal, let him do so. V'yim lo yachbots l'ga'olech, if he doesn't want to you, then ugealticha nochi chay Adonai, then as the Lord lives, I will redeem you. Shichvi ad haboker, stay here, lie here till the morning. Is he going to do anything to her? No. So why is he asking to stay till the morning? This is a guarantee that I will take you under my wing. You are mine. If he doesn't want you, I will protect you. Put yourself into my care. It's not sexual. Batishkav, Maraglotav, Adaboke, and she lay there at his feet until morning. Nothing happens between them. Batakom, Baterim, Yakish, Edreyehu, and she got up before one man could recognize another. It wasn't light yet. Vayomer, because he said to her, Ali Vadaki Vai Shahagorin, don't let anyone know a woman came here tonight. Why?
Reputation.
Pardon?
Her reputation.
Well, he's got a reputation to think about.
Her reputation
to think about, but there's another thing too. If it will become known, pardon?
Might disturb
it will disturb.
Interfere.
Might interfere what's going to happen. Yes, I think that is precisely the point. If they will know you were here tonight, then they'll say, you know why he wants to marry? He fancies her, and he's had her already, so he's going to put the final touches on it. I don't want that to be. I want people to acknowledge I'm doing this out of a sense of sacred obligation and responsibility, not because you are available. Because people will always think the worst, and this is not the worst. You are a worthy woman. I'm going to do the right thing by you. See the point? And he continues. Vayomer. He says, give me your mantle that you're wearing. Ve'echozila, and hold it for me. Vatochizba, she held it open. Vayamod sheish sorim, and he gave her 6 measures of barley. Vayashit aleh, and he put it upon her. That's a huge amount. Vayavo ha'ir, and she came back to the city. Vatavo el chamuta, and she came to her mother-in-law, Vatome, and she said, Miat biti, who is that, my daughter? Still dark. And told her all that the man had done. And she says, he gave me these 6 measures of barley, ki amare lai, because he said to me, we weren't told this the first time round, don't go home empty handed. Your mother-in-law is in need. See, that's again an insight into the man's character. This is not a bride price. He's not giving her anything for her. Don't go empty handed to your mummy. That's how he's developing the personalities. Just those, the death stroke of another aspect of the man's character. Vatomir. And then he says to Shvibiti, stay here. Until you know how things are going to turn out. Because I assure you, Kilo yishkotayish kim kilat adavah hayom. This man will not rest until he finishes this matter today. And so the story moves to its final phase. You don't mind if we overrun 9 o'clock a little, do you? The story moves to its final phase. Uvoez Allah Hashar, in other words, comes up to the city, to the gate rather. And why the gate? In ancient cities in the Middle East, they didn't have a forum. There was no empty space. What you had was the gateway, and the gateway was the main arena of activity. The judges sat in the gateway, the council of elders sat in the gateway, businesses transacted in the gateway, the nosy parkers stood in the gateway. And so he goes up to the gate of the city, and he sits there knowing that Chaim Boruch is going to walk by, because in a small town like that you see everybody eventually. And sure enough, and the Redeemer of whom Boaz spoke passed. Vayomer, he says to him, Sura Shava Pol Poloni Almoni, Mr. So and so, depart and sit down. He's ordering the man. You see, the Hebrew expresses it, the English doesn't. Because in Hebrew, an imperative is sur, turn aside, shave, sit down. Sura Shava is an emphatic command, which you can't express in English except by the tone of your voice. Sit down! So who is Boaz that he can boss people around like this? That question you may not have asked yourself. He's throwing his weight around, isn't he? He's not finished yet. But the guy sits down. No arguments. Yes, sir. No, sir. He took 10 of the elders. And he said, Shuvo, sit here. Yeshua, they sit down. He's ordering them around again. Have you not realized this? Did not occur to you? He says to the Redeemer, you know that portion of the field which belonged to our relative Elimelech? Machra Naomi. Naomi, who has returned from the field of Moab, has put it on the market. I'm not translating it literally. She has sold it. She hasn't sold it yet. She's put it on the market. And I said to myself, Egle oznecha lemor, I would inform you of this saying, Kanei negere yoshvim menegin zikne ami, acquire it now in the presence of the elders of our city. If you want to exercise your redeemership, do so. And if not, then please, Hagidali, let me know. Tell me. That I should know. Because there's no one apart from you. And I'm next in line. And he says, Egal, of course I'll take you. I've got a little bit of extra land. But I have to let you know, on the day that you purchased the field, Miyad Naomi, from Naomi, you've also acquired the daughter, the wife of the departed, Ruth, Lahakim, Shem, Hamet, Anachlato, with a view to establishing the name of the dear departed upon his territory. You have to take her too.
Translation is by it.
Yeah, well,
is it wrong?
Yes, I think so. You're acquiring her. For Isha Niknes, a woman is acquired. You pay money for her. Pardon?
A chattel.
No, an Israelite woman wasn't a chattel, but she was purchased. You purchased her from her father or from her brother.
If in his eyes she converted, why does he still refer to her as an Israelite?
Yes, why is he still? I think he does this for a very simple reason. I know who and what she is, and I'm still taking her.
Pardon?
Don't think he's trying to put the other one off. You see, the other man now says, "Well, Yomei Agoel, Oh Chaligol, I can't do it. Penashkite Nachalati, unless I ruin myself. So therefore." Galecha ata etegulati, you can exercise the right on my behalf. Kilo chaligol, I can't do it. An extra piece of land is fine, I've got an income from that. An extra mouth to feed, and maybe another child to feed? Sorry, can't afford it. So then he's putting him off. He has put him off when by telling him over the obligation, which raises the question, why has he done it this way? Is he playing games? You know, he's manoeuvring the man into saying, I don't want it. I don't think so. He doesn't want to give the impression that he's putting any pressure on this guy. And he genuinely says, your prerogative. And the man says, I'll have it. And he says, okay, but realize the prerogative extends to the woman. And then he of his own volition says, in that case, can't do it. So it is now apparent to everybody, Boaz has not cajoled this man, he hasn't maneuvered this man, he didn't begin by saying, you can redeem Ruth if you can afford it, if not I'm having her. He's been above board. And now the man says of his own volition, you exercise the right. And he does so without any hesitation. V'zot lefanim b'Yisrael ala geula ve'ala tmura. And this was the custom originally in Israel when it came to redemption or exchange. L'kayim kol davar, to substantiate any act. Shalaf ishna lo v'natan reyehu. A man would take off his shoe and give it to his friend. V'zot ha'ti'udah b'Yisrael. This was the symbol of evidence in Israel. This is not chalitza. Chalitza can only be performed by a woman on her late husband's brother who doesn't want to marry her. She takes off his shoe. This is not chalitza. This is what is known as kabbalas kinyan. Now, in Jewish law, ad hayom, to this day, acquisition requires a significant act. So if I buy a field, paying out the money is not acquisition. I have to go in the field and dig. That is kinyan. A young man stands under the chuppah and we say to him, you have to accept upon yourself the responsibilities of all that is written in the ketubah. He doesn't just say yes, what does he do? He has to hold up a handkerchief. That's kabbalat kinyan. Here in them days, you wanted to conclude a deal, you took your shoe off and you gave it to the guy and everybody said, kinyan! He's acquired it.
It's interesting there's ten.
He's got ten witnesses there, most certainly.
Normally
you need to above for what's going on here. This is land purchase. And we know in the case of estimating the value of land, you had to have 10 people. So there's quite a lot going on here. Sorry, you wanted to ask?
Is there a Sephardi Ashkenazi difference here?
Pardon?
Is there a Sephardi Ashkenazi difference?
In what sense?
Well, the Ketubah.
Well. Well, they both do it. No, both do it. No, this is not a vort. This is done prior to the chuppah, where you read the ketubah to the young man. I mean, reading the ketubah under the chuppah actually is an act of drama. You have to read the ketubah to the young man and say, do you accept this? And at the end of the ketubah, we say, v'kaneina, and by means of kinyan, we testify that kabel alav, the chatan has accepted the responsibilities of this. That's right. By his act. Yeah?
What's the significance of a shoe?
Why a shoe? Perhaps it's the one removable thing. What else have I got on me? Let's see, what else is there? And the shoe is something important to me, so I hand it over, and this is your act of kinyan. You've acquired it. Not the shoe, you've acquired the lamb, you've acquired the woman. And it now proceeds apace. Boaz now turns to all the people there, and he says, Einim atem hayom, you are witnesses this day, ki na kaniti et kol asher le'Elimelech, that I have acquired all that belonged to Elimelech, v'kol asher l'chilion u'machlon, what belonged to his two sons, v'yad Naomi and from Naomi, v'gam et Ruta Moavia, eshet machlon, kaniti li l'isha, and I have also acquired Ruth to be my wife, l'akim shema meta nachalato, to fulfill the duty
of establishing the name of the departed upon his property. Lo yikareit shema meit me'im echav, so that his name should not disappear from among his brethren. Umishal makol moa, from the gate of his city. Eidim atem hayom, you are witnesses this day. He has stated fully his reasons for marrying her. And how do the people respond? Very simple. Vayomru kol ha'am asher b'shar ha'zakenim, Eidim, we are witnesses. And then comes another one of these beautiful phrases, another bit of the golden thread. Yiten Adonai et ha'isha haba'a el beitecha, let the Lord make this woman who comes into your house, she's not a Moabitess anymore, karachelu chaleya, like the founding mothers of Israel, Rachel and Leah, asher banu shteyem et beit Yisrael, who built the house of Israel, va'aseicha el be'efrata, and act valiantly in Ephrata. Ukrashem beBeit Lechem, establish a reputation in Beit Lechem. VeBeitech kaveit Peretz asher yalda Tamar liHuda, and let your house be like that of Peretz, whom Tamar bore to Judah. Min hazera asher yitein Adonai lecha min aniara hazot, of the progeny that the Lord will give you of this woman. She is worthy to be in line with the mothers of Israel. It's a beautiful sentiment. And as you know, married, they have a child, and Naomi takes the child to her bosom, and they all say, right, it's as if Naomi has given birth to a son, and they call his name Oved, and as you know, he's going to be the ancestor of David. Now, I'll push you through the last bit, because I want you to come to verse 20. Verse 19. It's the last little paragraph there. At the end of the story of Ruth, the author does something strange. He adds a genealogical footnote. For Ela Toldos Peretz, these are the generations of Peretz. Peretz Eridet Chetzron. Peretz was the father of Chetzron. Chetzron Holidet Ram. And Chetzron fathered Ram. Ram holidet Aminadav, and Aminadav fathered Aminadav. Aminadav holidet Nachshon. Aminadav fathered Nachshon. Nachshon holidet Salma, and Nachshon fathered Salma. Salmon holidet Boaz, and Boaz was the father. Salma was the father of Boaz. Boaz holidet Oved, etc., etc., etc. What's all this doing here? All right, do I need a little family tree? Give a bit of yichus. Some modern scholars say this was added on, not from the original author. I think that's absolute nonsense.
Yeah, but wait a minute. It says about, may your house be like the house of Peretz, which the marble of Judah, so it's
reflection. Clearly, I'm amplifying on the family relationship here. But he has done so for a reason. This little colophone, this little genealogical footnote, is there because it provides us with the setting and the background for the whole story of Ruth. This little footnote is going to put the whole thing into perspective. And for that, have a look at my little tree that I have on the last page. Look at the right-hand side first. I've got Aminadav, who has a son called Nachshon. Have you heard of Nachshon ben Aminadav? He is the prince of Judah. We read about him last Shabbat.
The one who went across the
Red Sea. Yes, according to tradition, according to Midrash. But according to the Torah, he is Nasi Levetav. He is the prince of the house of Judah. And he has a son called Salma, who has a son called Boaz. What does that make Boaz? He is a prince. Now you can understand why he's ordering people around. See the point? Well, in this instance, the prince had authority within his tribe. And it would seem that Boaz is an aristocrat of the tribe of Judah, and he'll say to people, you sit down, and they listen to him. Get the point? Now, Nachshon, the Zedah, has a sister called Elisheva, who marries Aaron.
And Aaron has a son called Eleazar, with a son called Pinchas, Mazel Tov. So what does that tell us? I'll tell you what it tells us. In the wilderness, Pinchas is already a grown man. He may have been born in Egypt, for all I know. He's already a grown man. In fact, he's the Meshuach Milchama. He is the chaplain to the forces. Therefore, he participates in the war of conquest. What does that make Boaz, his cousin and his contemporary? Boaz must have fought in the war of conquest. Hence, he is called a Gibor Chayil, a mighty warrior. Do you get it? But there's a lot more here than you haven't got. I started by saying that of the ugly early history of our people, the period of the judges was the ugliest. Well, of the ugly history of the judges, the absolute pits was Pelegesh Begivah, the story of the concubine of Gibeah, which I'm not going into details now, because that's a triple X story that I'd like to tell you on another occasion. But what I will tell you is, it resulted in a bloody war between Benjamin and the other tribes, in which tens of thousands of people were slaughtered. Tens of thousands of people were slaughtered. In fact, almost the entire tribe of Benjamin was wiped out by the other Israelites. They destroyed every city, every man, every woman, every baby, until only 600 Benjamites were left, holed away somewhere. Moreover, the Israelites had taken an oath, will not allow our daughters to marry the tribe of Benjamin anymore. Oy vey. It means the tribe of Benjamin will die out. And if one of the tribes can die out, what's that going to do for the rest of us? So they were in classical shtuch. And they hit upon a tremendous idea. They're sitting there in their plenary council, and they said, which one of the towns did not come and join in on this battle? Oh, they said, Jabesh Gilead. Good. They sent 12,000 armed men to Jabesh Gilead and slaughtered every man, woman and child and saved alive only the virgins. And they came back with 400 nubile young virgins. But of course, even my mathematics tells me that 400 away from 600 leaves me with 200 hungry Benjamites. Oh, they said, don't worry, we've got a solution. There is a festival to the Lord at Shiloh every year when the young ladies come out to dance in the fields. Now you 200, go and hide yourselves in the vineyards. When the girls come out, grab yourself one, only one, don't be greedy, and rush back to the territory of Benjamin as fast as your short, hairy Benjamite legs will carry you. We will sort out the fathers. And they do. Now, how's that for murder, mayhem and rape? The rape of the Sabine women. No wonder the author of the book of Judges adds a footnote to this particular incident and says, a melech b'Israel, there was no king in Israel, so Isha Yashabi Enav Yaseh, everybody did the hell what he liked. And they did. No, so what? Well, in the midst of the murder and mayhem, the Israelites think, well, maybe we ought to ask God. So they go to the sanctuary at Beit El and they ask the high priest. Can you guess who the high priest was at that time? Pinchas. He was the high priest at Beit El. So what does that tell us about the story of Ruth? It was being enacted against the background of the worst, most violent, most horrendous period in the history of Israel. Can you understand why they're so nervous that she shouldn't be on her own? Don't let them find you anywhere else. Stick close to these young men. Don't let anybody lay a hand on you. They're dead nervous for her because they're living in unsafe times. And the little pocket of Bethlehem was a little corner of sanity in those horrendous times. So what's the message? It's very simple. Very simple message. In an era when the Israelites were behaving worse than pagans, there steps onto the scene a young pagan who behaves the way an Israelite should behave. Do you see my point? Ruth is the role model for what an Israelite should be, and she's the pagan, and that lot are Israelites. So the message is,
Darf Shaman, you should be ashamed of yourselves. You needed this girl to come along and behave in a manner that puts you all to shame. Fair message? So that's your Book of Ruth. Have I given you some insight into the book of which you were not aware? Good, then I've achieved my purpose.